What is up, everybody? This is the Sharp Angles Podcast. I am your host, Raymond Summerlin. We're coming to you live during the sixth round of the NFL draft. We were thought about waiting all the way until the end of seventh round, but then one of my co-hosts, Rich Rebar, he has strong thoughts about day three of the draft. Thoughts I will let him share with you shortly, but I will be joined here by Rich Rebar and Ryan McChrystal, our draft guru, our draft expert, mock draft expert, finishing top five this year. Just amazing. Just fire emojis all over for Ryan McChrystal and how he did this year as well. And we're just going to talk about the draft. You know, we did one of these after the first round, but more we're going to talk here about the overall draft, takeaways, favorite classes, things like that. But I have to let Rich get in because I got a Slack message from Rich. I think we weren't even like halfway through the fourth round and he was done. He thought the draft should be over. He sent me one at one point that said, "We still have 100 picks left. You're out on day three."
I still think there is 100 picks left. There still might be. I don't know if we've made any since then. I mean, listen, I appreciate you guys, you know, bumping this up and us going live during the rest of this, you know, expediting for the rest of my Saturday night. And I don't want to be like the guy that gets to talk about football has to work on a Saturday thing, boo-hoo. Like, you know, I think it's just from a top-down stance when you look at, like, and I can bring up some data to support this, but, like, what are we doing out here? Like, we're taking, like, 10 – we're just padding out filler. We're going to, like – wherever, like, I saw, like, there was an Oktoberfest. People were making picks. There's, like, picks from Mars, people on yachts. I don't even know what's happening right now. And then, you know, like, they're just padding all this stuff out. We had a great, you know, opening day on Thursday. The first round's a blast, right? You have all these big ticket items. Your organization, for better or worse, is going to be moving in a direction. Day two, you have a nice just morsel of good players being drafted. And then we're just here too long on day three. Like, it's like the third act of an Oliver Stone movie. Like, it just doesn't know when to get out. Like, the players here that are getting picked at this point have very low odds of, one, getting a second contract in the NFL, and then, two, if they get a second contract in the NFL with the team that drafted them. Actually, as we head into the seventh round, only 2% of all seventh round picks have gotten a second contract with a team.
All right, I've had enough. let's start talking about some awesome day three prospects right now.
But let me ask Ray one thing before we do it.
Sure.
How happy are you, Ray, to not be doing the NBC undrafted free agency blitz?
Yeah. Oh man. This is a little bit inside baseball. But when I used to work at Roto-World on the Roto-World news feed, we would be, you know, logging every pick throughout the entire draft. And once you get into round six and seven, you're getting picks for people who you don't have a pre-written profile for. And so you're going to try to figure out, you're going to some Division III football program's website to try to figure out who this person is, what their birthday is, how old are they, what are their stats. You're just trying to figure out all this stuff. And so it's a mess. And then you get to the end of it. And then all of a sudden, undrafted free agents happen. There are reports from like this guy signing with this guy team, this guy signing with this team. And it's just an absolute mess. And I think the reason why I'm perfectly happy with seven rounds is because it's less of that. And that undrafted stuff, if we started that after like fourth or fifth round, it would be madness. It would be absolute madness. But Ryan, I'm going to let you defend the sanctity of day three of the NFL draft.
This is where you win championships. I mean, these picks matter a lot. I mean, Rich is absolutely right that all of these individual players have low probabilities of getting second contracts and whatnot. But the ability to fill out your roster and make some impact, find some impact players on day three has a huge impact on wins and losses during the regular season. If you have good depth at every position, I mean, even quarterback these days, like how many quarterbacks we're seeing start, how many day three quarterbacks started last year, including undrafted free agents. So there are, I would say in the early rounds, it's really hard to like pick GMs that are good at it. There are GMs who are good at day three. And so that's why I think day three is really important, because there are certain guys who just, they get in their bag. They start reaching for players. Like they think they've found this sleeper and they're going to take him in the fourth round to make sure they got him. And the good GMs just sit there and wait and let those guys do their thing and just let the great players follow them. And, you know, I plan on bringing up one of the teams that's been doing that a little bit later on.
Yeah, and then we also end up with Joe Milton getting drafted, and so you know, you take the good. I we'll see.
How many backup more? How many more backup running backs can the Jets still squeeze out of this draft?
It's yeah, some of the running backs going now. It wasn't a great class to start with. And now, you know, now here we are on day three. But what we're going to do here, and like Ryan mentioned, we're going to talk about a few of the, you know, the teams that we like, what they're doing, a few of the teams that we don't like. Obviously, the draft's not even over yet. We have no idea how good these players are going to end up being. A lot of what I'll be talking about is just process and kind of what they're doing, because we don't know how good any of these players are going to be. And that's kind of the tough thing about making these judgments right in the wake of it. But you know, just to start out, I think we should think about just kind of overall takeaways. We kind of talked about this a little bit on Thursday, Ryan, where you talked about, you know, how much you liked what all the teams were doing in the first round. And I think that we've seen that continue. We just continue every single year, it seems, to have fewer and fewer GMs that you are seriously questioning if they know what they're doing, if they have a plan, if they really understand valuation and how to value positions and things like that. I think about the first round, 30 of the 32 picks in the first round were quarterback, wide receiver, offensive line, edge, or cornerback. Now, some of those offensive linemen might end up playing guard or center, which is less valuable than the tackles, but I'd say 26 of them, if we just would quarterback, wide receiver, tackle, edge, cornerback, at least that, those are the most valuable positions. Those are the positions they're spending first round picks on. That has not always been the case. It wasn't even really all the case last year, right? And so maybe this is just kind of a unique circumstance. But I look at it and I look at kind of the way some teams are moving around. And I think we have just, when I watch this draft, I think, okay, we know what we're doing now. And I think that these GMs have gotten a lot better. And I think you probably agree with that, Ryan.
Yeah, absolutely. Teams are just making much smarter decisions with who they're hiring. There are not very many coaches who have the final say in their organization. There are not a whole lot of former players who are hired like directly into a big role. There's a lot of former players who have worked their way up through the scouting departments and whatnot, but there aren't a lot of teams going out and just, you know, plugging someone in because they happen to play for their organization once upon a time. And so, you know, I always used to refer to those guys as the village idiots, and I don't think there is one right now. And as recently as last year, we had Bill Belichick, who the greatest coach of all time, but on draft day, especially over the last 5 or 6 years, he was the village idiot. And I don't think we have one. There's a bunch of new GMs, so we'll see. But at least how the new GMs handled the draft this year, it doesn't look like anybody really falls into that category anymore.
Yeah, and on Belichick, he's kind of an interesting example of it. Because one of the things that made the Patriots really special was that they understood a lot of the low-hanging fruit and simple things that you could do in the draft and kind of the way that they drafted, even if it didn't always work out, even if they couldn't draft wide receivers. I think they were ahead of other teams. And then those you know, advantages disappeared, and you know, it wasn't so good after that. What about you, Rich? Any kind of overall takeaway coming out of this weekend that really sticks out to you?
No, I mean, I'd echo that. I mean, obviously, I'm just trying to see, like, the new GMs, right? Like, you know, and same thing. Like, those guys didn't really, like, brick a lot of things. You know, you talk about turning over your organization to that new regime. You're kind of, like, want that first draft to say, like, all right, well, what's the process for these guys, right? And, you know, I don't necessarily agree with some of the individual players, like, you know, like Dan Morgan selected. But, like, there was a clear plan for them to at least add offensive talent and draft the positions that were like their largest needs in this draft. You know, they added cornerback. They probably didn't need to add Jonathan Brooks, but hey, but like they're trying to get guys around to insulate Bryce Young. Basically, they hired a head coach that has a 2-year track record of kind of resurrecting quarterbacks. They're at least trying to recoup some of what, like, you know, everyone has looked at this debacle of a trade from the surface level and just say, like, can we get something back? Can we just have something we could salvage from this? And then, you know, I think Washington had a really interesting draft. I'm more interested in the interesting draft perspective and to pick Ryan's brain a little bit, because I don't put a lot of the time that he does into like the non-skill positions. So, you know, getting his opinion on those picks will be like really good going forward. But there's a couple teams I would want to bring up during that.
I think also from a fantasy perspective, you know, which Rich and I, that's, you know, that's kind of where we are. And we'll be out back on Monday to talk about rookie rankings and dynasty rookie rankings. I thought one of the more interesting takeaways was, from a fantasy perspective, we didn't think this running back class was very good. And so this is not a massive surprise. But really, when you look into where a lot of the top backs, even the backs that we were interested in, landed, they landed in situations where it's hard to project a lot of early impact. I mean, Trey Benson to the Cardinals with James Conner, Blake Corum to the Rams with Kyren Williams, Marshawn Lloyd to the Packers with Josh Jacobs, Jalen Wright to the Dolphins with Raheem Mostert and Devin Achane. And you brought up Jonathan Brooks. And I mean, I think we would eventually expect this season Jonathan Brooks to be, if not the clear number one, at least the 1A in that backfield. But he's coming back from an injury. They still have Chuba Hubbard. As it stands right now, they still have Miles Sanders. And so as low as our expectations were for this running back class from like a fantasy perspective, I think it might have even worked out worse than we expected, just based on where everybody ended up. Is that fair?
Yeah, and they told us, the NFL told us in free agency, like what they kind of thought about this running back class, right? Because we haven't seen the veteran free agent running back market move like it had this offseason. And teams were aggressive early. And not just like the guys like Saquon and Josh Jacobs. Like we saw dudes like Gus Edwards like getting picked up.
Yeah.
Like that was like in previous years, that wasn't happening. So the NFL let us know early. And it's good to just take them at their initial word, right? Like we don't need to infuse a lot of hopium into a lot of these picks when we get into our rookie drafts. Like the NFL already let us know they don't really value a lot of these guys. No, we'll still have some hits along the way, but
well, absolutely. I mean, I made mention of this in the day two recap article that I did about Blake Corum. And you say, well, you think he's stuck behind Kyren Williams. But at this point last year, we were pretty convinced that Kyren Williams was stuck behind Cam Akers. And that didn't even last through week one. And so things, you know, change. And so, yeah, we'll have to see what happens with these running backs.
Hey, running backs are like closers in baseball. Like, do you just have the job? Yeah. Do you have the job right now? Like,
exactly. And if you have it now, you might not in a week. So that's where we end up. I do want to get to talking about individual draft classes. I do think that's interesting. And I would like all the fan bases to be angry at all three of us. So send your angry tweets at us when we talk bad about your favorite team. Before we do that, though, I do want to mention all of the draft content we have over at sharpfootballanalysis.com and will have over the coming days. You can check out Rich's round one fantasy recap. You can check out my day two fantasy recap. You could check out all of Rich's rookie rankings. That'll be out soon on the site. Ryan will be doing draft grades, will be out very soon on the site. Might even be already be up by the time you listen to this. You're listening to a podcast. We'll have Brendan Donahue do a too early mock draft for 2025 as we get to start thinking about that kind of stuff. We have a ton of draft content coming out over the next couple days on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Make sure you go over to Sharp Football Analysis and check that out. Make sure you check out all of Rich's fantasy information, which you can do in our fantasy football draft kit. You can save $5 on the draft kit with promo code SAVE5. So make sure you do that. A ton of stuff over there. And like I said, Rich and I will be back to talk about rookie rankings on the podcast. We're not done. Rich, we're not done with the draft yet. I know you want to be done. I know you desperately want to be done.
No, I don't want to be done with the draft. There's got to be a way to expedite this part of it, though.
1 minute picks.
I even have the tracker up while we've been in the show. And there's literally been 6 picks. Like, like, what are we doing?
Yeah, I thought when we set the time, I was like, oh, we'll definitely be into the seventh round, and we're still 20 picks from the seventh round. I think, to be fair, I'm pretty sure there are no compensatory picks of the seventh round, so the seventh round would probably go a little bit faster, but here we are. So let's get to talk about favorite draft classes. We start with you, Ryan. Who really sticks out when you're just going through these classes? And who did a good job, I suppose?
Yeah, I mean, like we already talked about, there's quite a few, but one of them that immediately jumps out is the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. It certainly helps that they had 7 picks in the top 100. So
it doesn't hurt, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's even a couple picks that I could criticize in there, but when you have that, when you've done a good enough job moving around to acquire that many picks, especially in a year when you really need it, like there are some teams who stockpile picks and it ends up being harder for them to fit them onto the roster. They probably need everybody from this draft class onto the roster. Not only that, but you have that many picks, you know that a bunch of these guys are going to fail. That's just how the process works, right? And so having 7 guys in the top 100, they probably do get 3 or 4 starters from this class, despite the fact that some of them are going to bust. Marvin Harrison Jr., obviously, like they hit a home run right off the top. You know, we talked about it, you know, all off season, how their best strategy was to just sit and pick and don't worry about trading down. Just take the guy that your quarterback desperately needs. I also want to just mention Elijah Jones, the cornerback that they took in the third round out of Boston College. He is one of the guys that I would pound the table for if I were in a draft room. over the last 2 years, he was just a stud in the Boston College secondary with incredible ball hawk skills. His route adjusted ball hawk rate was 83% above expected over the last 2 years. It's also, you know, that I love that stat, but it's also important that you can track it over multiple years, because we know that cornerback production can ebb and flow over time. There's some luck involved in it. But then he also followed up this combine. You know, he measured with 31 inch arms, which is pretty long, and he had a 42 inch vertical. So the fact that he was a ball hawk, you can then point to some numbers and say, well, this is why, and it probably is going to continue into the league because he has the traits that back it up. So he was one of my favorite. I thought he might actually last until day three, so I was kind of excited that he slid into day two, because I definitely thought that there was value there for him in the third round. So the Cardinals did a fantastic job.
Yeah, I think we'll have to, you know, obviously the players might not end up being good, and in 4 years we might not feel the same about it. But coming out of what happened last year in the draft and then what the Cardinals did this year, and I mean, they even, you know, it seemed like they were filling needs without reaching, and then they even were still moving around. Despite all of the picks they have, they were still moving around and making good value trades. It didn't make as many, obviously, but they made some good value trades. And we might just be at a point here where Monty Austin-Ford is just, he's just good at this. Like, that might be what we come out of this thinking. If that's the case, then yeah, the Cardinals are going to be really interesting moving forward. And I'll actually be talking about the Cardinals a little bit later, thinking about maybe some bets, because this team got a lot better over the offseason. And they already, I feel like Rich and I talked about it every week, they were already as competitive as a team with their record could be. Yeah, they were that competitive last year. Yeah,
they were live. It's fun to punch on Jonathan Gannon too, because the way he comes off. But like, I mean, him and Drew Petzing did a great job last year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, they're
what
they're
like an AI created coach, but he's good.
The social media team in Arizona, that's
they
the
do
one
no favors.
Spot in this organization. Yeah. They need to protect their coach a little more.
Maybe the draft, because there was draft capital on the.
Some of that, man, some of the stuff they let go about him. How about you, Rich? Who sticks out to you?
Yeah, I definitely had Arizona on my short list. I think it's too, like, when you look at the teams that just had a lot of picks too, you wanted to see kind of what they did with them. I have Washington too on my list as well. Another team that obviously, again, it does help that they had like a bunch of draft capital, but this is a team that's basically turning over like an entire new regime, new everything top down. Obviously, they get Jaden Daniels, and you're like, all right, well, what else are they going to do the rest of the draft? You know, they had Cliff Kingsbury, and you can see like a little bit of the vision coming together, right, with Cliff. And like, we've seen a little bit this at Arizona, and it didn't work out, but like that run game did adjust under Cliff too, and it was good. They already started with adding, you know, Austin Ekeler, you know, this offseason. They added some offensive linemen as well. But then, you know, at the top of day two, they grab Jerzon Newton, who like everyone liked. You know, I'm not going to act like I was out here grinding Jerzon Newton film, but, you know, seemed like it just one of those like no brainer, like lock in, you know, value pick. A lot of people like seemed like the cornerback that they took out of Michigan too, when we had like that run of like felt like 12 Michigan players in a row get drafted. I like Ben Sinnott a lot. He's definitely a creative guy. I think way he fits with like a guy like Cliff, you know, being kind of like that H-back kind of tweener, like, you know, definitely don't want to completely, you know, comp him to like a guy like Jason Morrow, but like what he did back in that system. But then Luke McCaffrey too. And like Luke McCaffrey's never going to be a guy. Yeah, Jason Morrow. Yeah.
What a pull is Jason Morrow. The ghost of dynasty fantasy football past. Jason Morrow. Good.
But Benson, that's like another one. Like, Benson and Luke McCaffrey are guys that, like, for my neck of the woods, like, may not be like huge, like, fantasy, like, guys. Like, they may never stay rack up like fantasy stats, but those are guys that, like, are just like hashtag good at the game of football. Like, they're just good at football. And, like, if you're just adding good football players, I feel like that's going to go a long way. So I do like a lot of what Washington did on the surface. And like, I don't know, I could let like I said, Ryan, let me know if Brandon Coleman was a good draft pick, or, you know, like I said, Mike Sarah, like, let me know.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. That they just sat there and they just took good players. Like Johnny Newton, the reason he was on the board was because he has a Jones fracture, and that injury tends to remove, it has a high rate of re-injury, and so certain teams remove him from the board. So that's why he was on the board there for them. But if you're Washington and you're trying to rebuild the franchise, you have to take some risks like that. Like, if it doesn't pan out, that's okay, because of how you handled this whole offseason and built this draft class with so many picks. Like, you're sort of building in those mistakes into it when you add picks like they were able to do. And so you take him because he fell for a specific reason, but you need to take those kinds of gambles. Same with Mikey Sanristil, the Michigan cornerback. he was on the board because he's almost certainly a slot only player just because he's so small, but he's really good in the slot. And so if you're Washington, you just need good players. So take the slot corner, and now you've got a good slot corner that you can plug in right away. So their process was also very good, I think.
On the fantasy side with Ben Sinnott, I'm really interested in that. I mean, all he has in front of him on the depth chart is Zach Ertz, who's 33 and was out of the league for the second half of last season. And you look at that situation and you think that's a spot he could step up. Obviously, we saw Sam LaPorta and Dalton Kincaid have some rookie success last year. I'm not going to say that their success washes away the decades of tight ends not being able to produce as rookies, but I don't know. I'm going to try not to get too excited and redraft about.
Let me ask Ryan real fast, a piggyback off that question. How do you think now that we knew they were going to take Jaden Daniels, and we knew that, Jaden Daniels plus Cliff, how do you think Jaden Daniels' play style from what he did at LSU kind of meshes with a lot of the assets Washington now has? When you look at like Eckler, Ben Sinnott, Luke McCaffrey, like these are not guys that are going to be winning, the air yards game, right? Like obviously you have McLaurin and Jahan Dotson already in house, but how do you think like this all now looks on the surface for Jaden Daniels, like as a runway coming out in year one?
I think in general, the offense is going to look a lot different because part of the reason the main reason really why he put up those insane numbers at LSU is they had one of the worst defenses in the country. And so they just had to chuck the ball around and just take chances downfield to try to keep pace because their defense was getting on the field and four plays later, they were giving up a touchdown. So you kind of just had to change the way you were playing offense. But when they got into a slower pace and were playing more controlled and just like asking him to, sit in the pocket, make smart decisions, he was doing it. And so I think in the NFL, it's pretty rare that we have games that look like all the LSU games did last year. I think he's going to be able to
handle. Those are the Washington games last year.
That's true. they have some experience. But I think we saw enough of him last year where he wasn't asked to just play hero ball because of their defense. We saw him handle playing from the pocket and making good decisions. He probably takes off and runs a little too much, but at least early in his career, he's going to have the athleticism to get away with that. And hopefully over time, you can kind of gradually coach that out of him and make him a little bit more of a pocket passer to try to, keep him healthy as he just like naturally gets older and more injury prone. So I think that we've seen enough that it's going to look very different than it did LSU, but that doesn't concern me at all.
That running ability, that has to be a concern for Austin Eckler. If we're trying to like look at veterans here, Rich, doesn't that feel like a concern for him, given what we saw with him as a runner last year? We've seen running quarterbacks not really target the running backs as much. He's going to be pretty reliant, I would say, on receiving. That has to me, that seems like a concern, the way Ryan kind of just described it.
Yeah, absolutely. All the additions. And you look at Austin Eckler's like receiving totals, it's a lot of this, and I wrote about this the last couple of years, are influenced by who's been in and out of the Chargers lineup the past 2 years, yep. Like his actual target counts. So like he also is a guy that when the Chargers were at full strength, his targets were actually way down anyways. So it was kind of misleading. So definitely it looks like just like the reunion, him and Anthony Lynn, obviously, go back. So, Brian Robinson, does he get goal line carries? There's like a lot of questions, surrounding Eckler, and you factor in he's going to be almost 30. So, between like the two aging running backs, I definitely feel like, or I guess if you say three, if you want to include Aaron Jones, I definitely think Eckler had probably the worst offseason run out when you can think Derrick Henry number one and then Aaron Jones two, especially because the Vikings didn't really add anything to combat. It's just Ty Chandler now. So, I mean, Aaron Jones was also a big winner.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to do a veterans winner.
And the Vikings haven't added a slot receiver either, which I think is interesting because, obviously KOC has been a huge, 11 personnel guy. Obviously, one of that coaching tree has been a big 11 personnel. Maybe a veteran post-draft like a Renfro or Tyler Boyd ends up going there. But the Vikings right now do not have wide receiver three on the roster.
I actually have, there's an article up on Sharp Football Analysis with a bunch of the still remaining free agents. And there are interesting wide receiver names out there. And I think that, that happens every year. But I also think that was part because of this draft class. We saw was it 16 wide receivers in the first 2 days, right? And so I think that that probably played a role in it. But if you still need a wide receiver, there are some, you mentioned two of them. There are some names out there that could be interesting. Now we're to the part of the podcast where we all talk about how much we like the Eagles draft. Do we need to do it, or do we just, do we let this slide? We're talking about, I mean, got value on the first two picks. They moved around, picked up a lot of 2025 draft capital. This is just my personal player opinion, so take it for what it's worth, because I know Ryan disagrees with it vehemently. But Johnny Wilson in the sixth round, I like that. I like that quite a bit. I mean, it's just normal Howie Roseman stuff, right, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that you can say about Roseman, especially the last 3 or 4 years, is how he moves around the draft, and he plays the game really well. He gets a lot of value, and we did that. I mean, he picked up, I believe, at least one, maybe multiple 2025 picks just for sliding down a little too much. I mean, that's sort of what I was talking about over there on day three. You start to see that's where even the GMs, who I think are doing a really good job early in the draft, some of them start to get a little greedy and think that they're smarter than everybody else and think they've got to, you know, part with next year's fourth round pick just to move up 10 slots and get somebody. And you're just not that smart. You're not that good at evaluating fourth round prospects. And Roseman is one of the guys who's often there to be like, yeah, sure, I'll settle for a guy further down my board. Give me your extra picks. And he also does a pretty nice job of finding some good values. A little bit later in the draft, Hatter Jr. in the fifth round. I know Eagles fans are excited about that just because of the name, but a perfect example of a guy who slid a little bit further, probably because he's not the greatest athlete, but the production is there. And so, like, in the fifth round, just take good players. Don't overthink it. Just take somebody who was good in college. If we're good in college, are more likely to be good in the pros also.
Good players like Johnny Wilson. Good job, Howie Roseman. I'm glad that we agree. It's so funny with Johnny Wilson is that you would think the way I talk about him that I've watched, like, I don't know, like 12 hours of game tape. I haven't really. Every time I watch him, he's good. Well, I don't know. I don't really know what to tell you. Anybody else really stick out for you, Rich?
No, not like necessarily like just like blew the doors off. Like I said, I think it was more about like just the lack of ineptitude across the league, like you guys kind of led into.
Yeah.
I do have a couple questions, though. There are some, like, I think there are some questionable drafts, though, I think. Like, they weren't inept, but I think, like, they're volatile. The first one I'll bring up is the Bengals, right? Like, the Bengals.
Interesting.
The Bengals, you know, you take Jermaine Burton, obviously a guy comes with off-field issues. There was a consensus that he was better than his performance in that offense, but like still is a high volatile pick. Like he doesn't really offer any objective signal that like he is going to hit in the NFL. And you take Eric Hall, another guy who has like a mountain of injury history. I know it's Iowa tight end, but like so very boom bust feels like draft for the Bengals.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
after round one, obviously. You know, we're talking the rest of the picks.
Yeah, no, they had a strange draft. I mean, I like some of the players that they added, but looking at the types of players they added, that some of them are developmental guys and the positions where they added them, I don't see any. I can't point to someone and be like, that's going to help them get back to the playoffs and contend for a Super Bowl this year. I'm not sure any of them are clearly going to do that this season. Now, even Amarius Mims, who I like a lot, I had him pretty high on my board. I think he's either the left or right tackle of the future for them, and probably for a long time, but he's probably not starting this year unless it's due to an injury. Same thing with Chris Jenkins. I think he's probably starting next year, but I think they have some guys ahead of him on the depth chart right now. And so Jermaine Burton is probably the guy with the easiest path to playing time. But like you said, he wasn't very good at Alabama, despite the raw talent and like the recruiting profile that he had. You know, I think one of the reasons why they probably gambled on him was they feel like, well, we've got Burrow, Chase, Higgins, like we've got a lot of leaders who've been there for a while. We'll figure it out. My response to that is he played for Nick Saban and he didn't figure it out. So, you know, I got doubts.
Yeah, I think that calling it the way you did, Rich, that it was risky, and that it is, you're trying to say, it could work out, but we have, you know, we have some issues. But where the Bengals are right now, as they have a pretty good roster, you know, if Joe Burrow just stays healthy, they're probably going to be pretty good. I think taking that those kind of risks makes some sense. On Burton specifically from a fantasy perspective, Rich, I do think, you know, we're going to look at him. He was a third round pick, to be fair, but they just took Charlie Jones in the fourth round last year. We saw Andre Yosovich.
Yoshivach,
yeah, I like him a lot. We saw him like get involved last year and be fine. I think it is jumping the gun a little bit to think that he's just going to be the wide receiver three, especially like you said, with some of the history that we've seen. And even if T. Higgins is not around for whatever reason, it seems like he will be there this year. But even if he's not around for some reason, like being the number two, I think if you're looking in Dynasty and you say, all right, this is going to be the number two to Ja'Marr Chase with Joe Burrow after this season, that to me feels like jumping the gun a little bit. And maybe Burton ends up, you know, a little bit overdrafted in dynasty rookie drafts because of that.
I mean, he does fit like the profile of what you would do like in a swing, like a round two pick, right? Like all upside, all gas. And if you don't hit, it's like kind of whatever. It is interesting that like you laid out like kind of their roster for year one, because how does he get on the field? Because for him to get on the field, you know, we need one of these guys to get in the slot. And Ja'Marr Chase did increase the slot rate to 25% last year, but it was 25%. Like, they're not going to move him in for like Tyler Boyd levels of slot production. So does Charlie Jones clear? Does he have like the largest ever Trent Irwin? Don't forget about the ghost of Trent Irwin. Like, this guy
never do.
This guy never goes will. Away, man. So Burton doesn't fit in. Like, they're not going to run a three wide receiver set where you like say their top three receivers are Chase, Higgins, Burton, but they don't get on the field that way because their deployment doesn't equal that, because where Burton wins. So it's gonna be interesting to see, but he does kind of fit like that boom bust, like fantasy aspect. I got one more one to throw off you guys. And we kind of like at 1 a.m. kind of questioned the Ricky Pearsall pick, and everyone else loved it. Like, we were the only ones that kind of like everyone else that I listened to loved it. Thought it was like a great thing. Like Shanahan pulled another rabbit out of his hat. If you look at what the 49ers did during this draft, though, they had a clear, I don't know if it was a clear process by intent or they just didn't care. Dude, they drafted all 5 6-year players. Like, they drafted one guy, Malik Mustafa, that's going to be he'll be under 24 years old as a rookie. And this is a team that, like how do these old guys get on the older, I say old guys, these older rookies get on the field? Like you're talking about, Pearsall, like, obviously we've been waiting for these trades, but they took Jacob Cowing after this. Like, this is a team that runs no 11 personnel. Like how does Cowing get on the field, like, on his rookie contract? Like, where are the dominoes that have to fall? Isaac Garendo, we did the Shanahan's got it. And this was the most obvious thing to ever happen during the draft, Garendo to the 49ers. Yeah. But like, he trades up for another running back in the, you know, on day three. How does he get on the field? Like, how do these guys get on the field? And like, they're all older rookies. If you do that with like a 21-year-old, big deal. Like, you know, you can kick the can on the second contract and stuff. But like, it's very odd the 49ers drafted like all of these very fifth and sixth year guys.
Without question, that's my least favorite draft right now. And, you know, we praised all the GMs off the top. The one guy who is trending in the wrong direction is John Lynch. And I think Brock Purdy has saved his job.
Bought you a lot of rope.
Yeah. Like, without Brock Purdy, what has come of the last couple drafts for the 49ers? Like, 2 years ago, they had to Drake Jackson as their top pick in the second round, but their top pick, Davis Price, Danny Gray, those were their third round picks that year. They're not getting any production there, really. Jair Brown last year in the third round, he ended up being a starter. I believe he had an interception in the Super Bowl, right? But then they also took a kicker in the third round, so that didn't look very good for them last year. His process over the last couple of years, and going into this year now, where you see like big reach in the first round, he reached in the second round too. Renardo Green out of Florida State was a fifth or sixth year guy who didn't really break out until this past season. And so drafting that type of player, especially at a skill position where like the positions where you rely on pure athleticism the most, like wide receiver, cornerback, when those guys break out late, that's usually a red flag. Cause if you've got the crazy athleticism to play in the NFL, you should be doing it already at like 20 years old in college. Like, we should see it already. And you didn't see it with Renardo Green. So very similar to the conversation we had the other day about Xavier Leggett. Like, what if you're an NFL wide receiver, why didn't we see it before you were 23 years old? So yeah, I've got the 49ers drafts the last couple of years are really concerning, and they didn't. There's certain guys I like. I love the Isaac Arendo pick in the fourth round. Like, I can't point to this and say, like, there's no way they're coming around with some starters in a couple of years, because there's Dominic Pooney in the late third round also is another guy that I kind of like, and I think there was good value there. So it's not like there's a it's easy to point to all of these guys and say they're going to be bust, but the process is trending in the wrong direction for Lynch over the past few years.
I'm actually interested in throwing out a name here, because you mentioned them at the top that you, Rich, that you weren't, you know, that you were kind of fine with them, and that's the Panthers. And I get your kind of point on the Panthers with they said, all right, we need offense. They went and got offense. But you look about how they did it, and, you know, they moved up one spot for a risky player like Ryan just brought up, was they able to get. And, you know, they had to give up some draft capital to do that. To be fair to them, I believe they're leaving the draft with the same number of picks they came in with. So they were able to do some one for twos and then some two for ones. And so they were able to do it. But you're still moving up and giving up some draft capital for a risky pick. You take a running back in the second round who's coming off an injury, and even if he is the best running back, and even if he turns into your starter, running back wasn't really your issue on offense, and you're spending a second round pick on it. So I get it. I look at the Panthers draft, and again, we're picking nits here because, like we've said, it's a lot of these drafts were pretty good. But when I look at kind of what they did, you went and got offense. That's good. That makes a lot of sense. How they did it though, and where they drafted a running back, and, you know, all of that kind of stuff, I think, I don't know. I feel like they could have done better. And so when I'm thinking about draft classes that I'm not, you know, too enamored with, the Panthers are at the top of my list. And so I thought it was interesting earlier. You seem than not liking it.
Yeah, I just meant from like, does your new regime have like a plan? At least we don't have to agree with the plan, but do they have they have like a cohesive plan? And that's what, at least, like, because you listen to Dave Canales talk, like, he has been open about the things he wants to do. And to be fair about Xavier Legette, like, and us all questioning that pick, like, at least all of the conversation around Legette the day after was, at least he knew what player he was drafting, right? Like, he wasn't like, I'm going to try to make this guy DK Metcalf and Mike Evans. He's not an X receiver. You know what I mean? It was like, so at least he understands that, because we don't see that. That also doesn't happen as much as you think happens in the NFL draft. So, and like, we know he wants to run the football. He told us in Tampa he was going to run the football. He told us the first thing he got hired in Carolina, he wants to run the football. So what's he going to do? He's going to get his guys, right? Like, he has no ties to Chuba Hubbard, whose contract is expiring this year, or Miles Sanders, he didn't sign him last year. So I, like I said, we don't have to agree with the individual picks, and I don't either. Like, I would have taken Legette at 32, but like, they came in with like kind of a plan, and they executed that, and that's kind of what you look for. And just instead of just saying like, we're just going to throw things at the wall.
Yeah, and I think that's fair as well, which is why I'm saying we're kind of picking nits a little bit here. You mentioned the 49ers, one of the teams you were a little disappointed in their draft, Ryan. Anybody else really stick out to you?
Well, the Raiders, for one. I mean, we talked about it, you know, after round one with Bowers in the first round, and how, as talented as he is, given their quarterback situation, adding someone like Bowers just doesn't make you a better football team. Like, you need to have more weapons around any tight end to be getting enough out of that position for it to really be valuable to you. And then in the second round, I like Jackson Powers Johnson a lot, and that was a steal where they got him. It doesn't worry me a little bit that they went out and drafted a center who is really known for his contributions to the power run game after the way that we saw they played offense late in the season after Antonio Pierce took over. Yeah. So is this just going to be more incentive for them to just run the ball up the middle play after play? I like the pick, but it does sort of – it's signal – I don't like the signal it sends necessarily, even though it was a good value. And then in the third round, they drafted Delmar Glaze, offensive lineman from Maryland. He played left and right tackle for them. He was a strange prospect because he had some dominant games against, basically he dominated the guys that you thought he was supposed to dominate. Like, when they played Rutgers in Nebraska, he looked like a stud. And then he kind of got whipped when he played against teams like Penn State and Michigan over the past couple of years. And so it was too risky of a pick is what I'm saying for the third round and a team that still has quite a few holes. And then another team that I want to mention in this category, I don't want to say that they're one of the worst classes because I like the players that they have come away with, but I just wanted to talk about the Lions a little bit and their process here, because we know they drafted two cornerbacks, Terrion Arnold and Ennis Rakestraw. Arnold fell to them. I'm sure they were surprised to be able to get him. And then Ennis Rakestraw, he fell because he's dealt with injuries throughout his college career. I believe he's healthy right now, but He was injured last year. 3 years ago, he was injured. That 1 year in between, though, when he was healthy, he was one of the best cornerbacks in the SEC. So the talent is there. So I like that pick. But then they did today, they traded both of their 2025 third and fourth round picks to move up today. One of the, they traded next year's third round pick to move up in the fourth round this year and draft Giovanni Manu, a developmental offensive tackle. He's not going to see the field this year. Then they traded next year's fourth round pick to move up in the fourth round again for Sione Vaki. And they announced him as a running back. He was a safety for most of his college career. He did play a little bit of running back, but he only had 42 career carries. So you get, if you're going to part with future picks and you're the Lions, a team that obviously wants to win the Super Bowl next year, you do that because you're saying we're pushing all the chips in. We are all in right now. When you say, well, hey, we're going to give up these picks because we need someone to come in and can, you know, join the rotation on the defensive line or whatever. They drafted two guys who are not going to see the field. So what are you, what's that process all about? It's just, it's really strange. They got better through this draft because I love those first two picks, but their process today is really strange, especially when you factor in they just handed out big contracts to Amon-Ra St. Brown and Penei Sewell. They got to pay Jared Goff a really big contract as well. They have to decide whether or not to pay Taylor Decker at the end of this year. I think they probably should if they can afford it. But if you're going to do all of that, you're going to need a lot of picks next year to fill out the rest of that roster with rookie contracts. And now they just don't have enough picks. So they're sort of in this like middle ground for me as far as evaluating their draft, because I definitely think they got better, but the process has been strange.
Well, that was the real concern with what they did in the first round last year. It ended up, you know, Gibbs ended up hitting, although, I mean, as a running back ever going to repay that value? That's the question about Gibbs. He ended up being good, but was he good enough to repay that value? I don't know. Then they take the linebacker who, you know, didn't have a great season. Obviously, Brian Branch turned into a very good player for them, but it was a lot of this, I know best, right? I am going to take these players because these players are good and I know that they're good. And if you're right, you're right. Good, you know, good on them. And they at least got two of those three right. But that doesn't win out in the long run. We see those types of GMs fall. I mean, think of John Snyder and some of the bad drafts that he had in Seattle, and they've come back and they've done better. But even if you were the best evaluator in the world, you are going to miss. And if you are consistently, if you're taking fewer and fewer shots because you're moving up to take your guys, then those misses become magnified even more. And I think that's what you're saying here, Ryan, is that they got to get it right. And if they don't get it right, now you've taken away picks for next year. That becomes really difficult. Another team, I mean, I don't want to talk about a lot of it, but I mean, the Falcons, it's weird with the Falcons. Falcons are like the Lions to me because I really like Michael Penix, but where they are to do that and then to again trade up in the second round to take give up pick number 79 to have eight spots in the second round to draft a defensive tackle. I mean, that's a need with Grady Jarrett's injury, and you know, if he works out, that's great. But I don't know. There's a lot of stuff in there I didn't like. But I feel like we've talked quite a bit about the Falcons. Got to throw some good ones. We moved on. Rich is so angry. We moved on so quick to the bad ones. I do want to throw out a couple other ones, though. I do want to throw out a couple other ones. I mean, the Steelers. I think the Steelers probably had a really good draft filled needs.
Love Roman Wilson. Picks.
Roman. I knew I could bring out Roman Wilson from Ryan, his number four wide receiver on his big board. Peyton Wilson. I know obviously he had his issues. But that feels like a big value where they got him. I like kind of the Steelers, same division, the Ravens. I mean, you're still worried about their offensive line, but where they got Nate Wiggins, where they got Devontae Walker, that feels like good value there as well. And then, I mean, the Colts, I just want to say about the Colts, it seems like they got good value with their top picks. And so that's great. But then Chris Ballard's rant about anonymous scout quotes on Friday night just put it over for me. I was so happy. He says some words that maybe we don't say in polite company. And then at the end of it, he says, "I apologize for my language." Well, I don't really, but I guess I do. And I was like, yep, sold. Chris Ballard, you are my favorite GM. Any thoughts on any of those classes, Ryan?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought the Ravens, because that was the team that I mentioned that I wanted to talk about. It tends to separate themselves on day three by just being like, all right, you guys trade up. You guys go do all the stuff you want to do and just let the good players fall to us. They didn't move around as much as they sometimes do. They only used their, I believe they only used their original picks. They only had three picks on day one and two, at least. But then in the fourth round, they just sat there and let DeVontaz Walker and TJ Tampa fall into their lap. Two guys who were consensus top 100 prospects, and both of them have flaws. Like there are reasons why they started to slide down the board a little bit, but by the time you get into the fourth round, who cares? Take the talented players. They were both really good college players, and there's almost no risk involved when you're, you know, taking them in the fourth round, because if someone took either of those players in the third round, we would have not had a huge problem with it. So they do this every year. They just sit there and they just let good players fall into their lap, and, you know, their time to pick comes around and they say, all right, well, you know, this might not be a big position to need, but he's the best guy on their board, so let's just keep bringing in good players. And that's how they're able to be good every single year, because the depth is always there because of this process.
This year, it actually, they are position of needs. Like you could say corner was a need. You could definitely say offensive line was one their biggest need, probably. Wide receiver is a need. So it wasn't even the normal Ravens thing. They actually even got position of need and still got value. It's I'm saying the Ravens, the Eagles, how do they keep getting away with this, right? He can't keep getting away with this. There we are every single year. I do want to throw, as we get here to the end, I do want to throw out some bets, some interesting bets that I'm thinking about and see what y'all think about them coming out of the draft here. Before we do that though, I do want to mention, you know, Ryan's draft grades. Those are going to be available at sharpfootballanalysis.com. You know, sometime on Sunday and Monday, Rich's rookie rankings will be available as part of the Sharp Football Draft Kit. As well, if you're doing dynasty drafts, dynasty rookie drafts, you need Rich's rookie rankings. I will be using Rich's rookie rankings as I go through my drafts, which could be a problem because I draft against him, I think, in at least one dynasty league. So we'll see how that ends up. But make sure you go and check that out in the Sharp Football Fantasy Football Draft Kit, which you can get for $5 off with Save Five. I've already kind of run this bet by Rich. And so I want to start with you here, Ryan. I was looking at the Offensive Rookie of the Year odds, and obviously Caleb Williams is, you know, the by far the favorite for it, and that makes 100% perfect sense. But when I started looking at the Rookie of the Year odds, J.J. McCarthy is fourth on that list at plus 800. And when I look at his situation, where he ended up, that I do expect him to start right from the beginning. And that team, I mean, that defense was pretty good last year. They're in a tough division, but, you know, it's the same division as Chicago. Chicago has the exact same issues. I think that we could see the Vikings be better. We see the Vikings be better than the Bears, and we could see the Vikings even make the playoffs. We know that the weapons are there. And if that happens, I mean, J.J. McCarthy at plus 800 for Offensive Rookie of the Year, that feels pretty good to me. What do you think about that?
It's probably not a bad value, but the fact that they're good could hurt him, because if they don't need to throw the ball and like rack up the score in certain games, I don't think they're not going to ask him to do that unless it's absolutely necessary. You know, like he's not going to come out and put out huge passing numbers, I don't think, unless they find themselves trailing by, you know, double digits in the second half consistently. I don't think that I do think he has a much higher ceiling than we saw at Michigan, like we've talked about all off season, but because he wasn't asked to do it at Michigan, I don't think you should want to come out and ask him to do it as a rookie. You should ease him in, kind of like the Bills did with Josh Allen, where we saw them, you know, for all the talent that he obviously had, they were a pretty run heavy team early in his career. They didn't ask him to do a lot unless they needed to. I'm shocked that even that Caleb Williams is the favorite. Why is Jaden Daniels not the favorite? He plays for the worst team. He's the best runner. He's going to put up crazy stats. He's going to be an incredible fantasy player. So like he's going to be on everybody's mind all the time because he's putting up fantasy numbers. He's the favorite. Am I crazy here?
So it's funny you mentioned that, because as I was going through them, I don't even remember. Okay, yeah, Jaden Daniels. There he is. Plus 650. So Jaden Daniels third behind Marvin Harrison Jr.
Behind Marvin Harrison.
Plus 600. That Marvin Harrison Jr. bet with all of the quarterbacks, that feels to me like that's a bet I wouldn't make, because there are so many quarterback options that I think it's going to be tough for Marvin Harrison Jr. Even if he has a massive season, which he very well could, because he's going to be the number one wide receiver with a decent quarterback, with Kyler Murray, right? And so there's a chance that he has a massive season. But if any of the four top quarterbacks, if any of them end up having good seasons, then it's really hard for a wide receiver to kind of, you know, right. We saw last year with CJ Stroud and Puka Nacua, right? We saw that this exact same thing happen. And so that Marvin Harrison bet, of all of these kind of early ones, Malik Nabers plus 900, I'm definitely not interested in that. I'm not so interested in that. But to your point, Jaden Daniels plus 650, third on this list. That feels like a smash bet. You're saying that's a smash bet. Just go and put it in now.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an incredible value. I really think he should be the favorite because he's going to run a lot more than Caleb. Caleb Williams is a great athlete, but he doesn't take off running the way Daniels does. So Daniels is, I think he's just going to put up a lot of real impressive numbers, and they're probably going to be losing more often, which is just going to pad his stats even more.
What about Bo Nix plus 1600, Rich? Sean Payton, he's going to have him throwing.
I will say this, man. Listen, we talked about the desperation of round one. I don't think Denver did a terrible job this weekend outside of maybe. I don't see how this gets better. Like, this is like still like a roster when I look at it. Like, Bo Nix has to be the guy. And obviously, yeah, if he's not, then you're not getting out of this hole. But from a top down stance, like, I can't really knock them what they did this weekend.
You had a really good, I saw a tweet from you, Ryan, that I think is a really good take on kind of the situation.
Yeah, I was just going to jump in and say that if you told us that the Broncos traded down in the first round to pick up an extra second round pick, took Bo Nix at like 25 or whatever, took Troy Franklin in the second round with that pick they acquired, and then took Jonah Ellis in the third round, you'd say, all right, they maybe reached a little for Bo Nix, but they traded down. They ended up with some good talent. They paired him with his college receiver, which we love. You know, it just makes the transition easier. Well, they didn't do that. They should have done that. They didn't, but they still came away with those three players. So
yeah. They
lucked into it a little bit because Troy Franklin probably shouldn't have still been available there. I was really surprised that he was, but that's who they came away with. So ultimately, you look at their class as a whole and you ignore where they came off the board, and it's hard to criticize them too. I don't like the process, but they ended up coming away with a class that we can say is actually a pretty promising group for them.
Yeah, if you had asked me on Thursday night who's going to be on your least favorite draft classes, I mean, I'd have had the Broncos on there for sure. But then going through it for this exercise, I didn't even think about putting them on that list. I don't love it. And they didn't have a ton of draft capital anyway, so it wasn't like they were ever going to have an outstanding class. But I looked at what ended up happening, especially Franklin falling, that really helped them. But I mean, even if it wasn't Franklin, because of all of the wide receivers, they could have ended up with Devontae Walker, like we mentioned, right? Like, there were other options here for them as well. And so it all ended up working out for them. Another bet I'm thinking about here is Bears plus 350 to win the division. Now, if this happens, Caleb Williams will be the offensive rookie of the year, and the J.J. McCarthy and Jaden Daniels bets, those won't be any good. But I look at the Bears, and that roster, I think, would have made the playoffs last season if Justin Fields was healthy all year. I imagine the Bears are hoping that Caleb Williams is going to give them more than Justin Fields was able to give them last year. That's why they've made this move. And I think if you look at what they've done, it's tough to argue that the Bears don't have an even better roster this year. It's tough to argue that they haven't surrounded Williams with more talent than what Fields had even last year. And so I've been on this train for a long time. I have the Bears pretty high in my power rankings coming out of free agency. I think that this team is probably better than people give them credit for. It's such a tough division with the Packers and the Lions. That's the problem. But, and the Vikings, if they end up being good, like maybe they will with McCarthy. But I still think plus 350 to win the division, it's interesting to me. What do you think, Rich?
I mean, I don't have a ton of strong pushback on that. Obviously, you have the Lions and the Packers then after that, you know. So, I mean, it's you're going for a plus bet. Longer shots, probably, I would say, like, not Arizona to win the West, but, like, maybe Arizona, win total Arizona, like, to make the playoffs even in the NFC, like, is kind of frisky. Like, that, I think those are spicier. Everyone, and I feel like the Bears are just, like, you know, we've been doing this for a couple of years. Everyone wants to get out of the Bears.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the Bears roster is good.
It is. I mean, as I said, I don't really have a pushback. I don't really have any pushback
on it. Arizona to make the playoffs actually producer Matt.
I don't want to follow the herd.
plus 330 Arizona to make the playoffs. If you like that, I actually have in here my other bet.
That's it? Only plus 330?
Only plus 330. I went through the make a playoff bets, and they are not good bets.
Yeah, they are. It doesn't sound like I was expecting something better than 330.
There are like I didn't count it, but there are more teams with negative odds to make the playoffs than there are playoff spots, and that's an immediate red flag for that market. And so, yeah, I didn't find a lot of value there. I do want to throw, though, the Cardinals over to you, Ryan. I actually had one of the other bets I was thinking about was Cardinals over 6.5 wins. You know, we talked a lot about their draft, how they moved around it. I'm not saying the roster is good, but the roster, based on free agency, is definitely better than it was last year. And as I mentioned, they were frisky. Frisky is always the word I would use for the Cardinals. They were as frisky as you could be for where they ended up, you know, in the draft. And so over 6.5 wins, it's a tough division, but plus 330 to make the playoffs. I don't know. I'm interested in that as well. I agree with Rich on that. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, over 6.5 wins, that I would certainly lean over that if I wouldn't actually take it, just because they added a bunch of starters. Like you said, they weren't terrible last year when Murray was out there. And especially in that division, like I think they should be nowhere close to being favored to win that division, especially with the 49ers there. Yeah. But the Seahawks and Rams with older quarterbacks, Stafford has a bit of a recent injury history. Like you could certainly, I don't think anyone would be shocked if it just fell apart on the Seahawks or Rams this year due to aging, declining quarterback play or injuries or whatnot. And so could they rise up in the division a little bit just because of what happens to everybody else? That also seems like a possible way that you pick up a couple extra wins just because of, you know, the division that you're in.
Yeah, I mean, they went 3-5 with Kyler last year. They beat two playoff teams. One was the Steelers, so asterisks if you want, you know. But they lost one game by 1 point to the Seahawks. They lost by 5 points on the road to Houston, who ended up, you know, in the playoffs as well. Like this team was live, man. Like you said, they were live.
Frisky is the word that I've decided to use. The frisky Cardinals, as I continued to call them all of last year.
Chip Reamon getting drafted to a team with a bird logo? Like that was the highlight of the whole draft weekend.
I was so excited to hear people have to talk about the birds aren't real conspiracy, which is, I want to be very clear about this. I believe that birds are real. However, that is my favorite conspiracy of all time, that Reagan killed all the birds and replaced them with spies. That is the best conspiracy theory. It's so funny. It is my favorite conspiracy. And I'm glad that he's just leaning into it. Let me ask you about Tip, actually, Ryan, because I wrote a little bit about him yesterday in my day two recap. And I'm kind of, you know, because of the production, I am kind of just like saying, all right, I'm just not going to be interested in fantasy. Is there any chance that we're going to get a situation where those physical tools turn into something in the NFL? I mean, he is behind Trey McBride. Is he going to end up being a tackle? Like what is the future here for him?
I mean, it's hard to have any faith in, I mean, like I said before, with skill position players and tight ends, you know, sort of in that mix. If it took you a long time to break out, or in this case, you never did it in college,
right?
You got to have a healthy dose of skepticism. That said, the size and the testing numbers, like it's easy to say that he's on like the Gronk spectrum. Like he's a long way from the peak of that spectrum, which is Gronk, but he's on that spectrum as far as like the style of football that he plays. So could he develop there? Yeah, sure. Why not? But chances are he's just Max Williams.
Yeah, and that's what I thought. It was basically that, because that's not Trey McBride's game. And we know Drew Petzing's, like, his MO last year was the run scheme. And, you know, obviously that second round you add Benson and you add Reamon. And I just assumed it was more leaning into, like, this is what we did well without the players. Let me get some more of my players that I want to do these things. And we just let Trey McBride and Marvin Harrison have 60% of the team targets.
Yeah, and he can block, and he played for Brett Bielema, who likes to play like old school Big Ten football and run the ball. So like if you want to run the ball a lot and you needed, you know, a blocking tight end on the roster, he can certainly do that while not being completely useless in the passing game either. So that he could be a very serviceable depth piece for them. But the higher ceiling is there. You never know.
Good old Bert. Everybody loves old Bielema. That's it for us. We're into the second pick of the seventh round, Rich. I was pretty sure we'd be done already with the draft.
The rant turned on like saying, like, I don't want it to be like these picks don't matter. I think just the day three after, because, you know, Friday is like you get off. It's a weekend, right? And like we're having fun. We're partying. We're still drafting good players. And especially like, you know, for Dynasty, like we're happy. Like it's all because day two is like where all the guys go in Dynasty. Like, yeah, I just want my guy to get day two capital. And then like day three, like this thing started at noon.
Yeah.
Well, we just had a player come off the board that I haven't heard of, and that doesn't happen every year. So that's where we're at. Travis Clayton from England is the school that he's listed at, and I have not come across him in my preparation. And so I'm excited to go find out. He's listed as a guard drafted by the Bills. So I'm excited to go learn about a new prospect because it doesn't happen every year.
School is England, or just like they just declared, like, we're just getting a guy?
I assume it means he's from England and probably didn't play football. I did not come across him in my prep. So I'm excited to go learn about one more prospect.
We had a CFL guy drafted too.
Yeah, Quantes Stiggers. He's an exciting prospect. I'm excited about him. He was out of football for a few years, and then he played in that fan-created football league stood out there and was fantastic in the CFL last year. So he's actually a really exciting day three pick. It's hard to guess how he'll transition because of the career path he's had, but he is a really interesting player.
I don't want it to be a thing where the picks don't matter. I want it to be a thing like, what kind of show are we putting on here? Come on, NFL.
You just want undrafted free agency to happen early. These players would still get picked up. That's all.
I think it would just be more chaotic, right? Like you said, like it would just be chaos. Like imagine if like just like we made like the first four rounds of draft and like it just went into chaos afterwards, just bidding.
Yeah. If
let me throw this up you, Ryan. Do you think like the good teams would have an edge if that happened?
Oh, they'd have a huge edge. The good teams already have – they're already teams that have an edge because, first of all, some teams are just better at handling the free agency process, but the good teams – or the good teams or the teams at certain positions have – where a player sees like a path to competing for
– That's also – would it be problematic the inverse way where players then would choose? Yeah.
It would also be a little bit chaotic because obviously at the end of the third – like the third, fourth round, like there's still really good players on the board and you would have player agents – would then be tanking their draft stock to be like, no, you don't want this guy. He's not going to play for you.
Let me just be on the market.
Yeah, we want to hit the free agency market.
we'd have fourth round linebackers, Eli Manning the draft.
Yep.
That would be.
It would happen.
I'm suddenly real into this, Rich.
Now we're speaking Ray's language.
you have introduced absolute chaos to this process. And I am.
Anarchy.
I am suddenly
Ray, you always will win him over with some anarchy. Can we radicalize something? Then raise in. Yes.
My last D&D session, I play a bard and I unionize some wolves. And so that's the level of chaos that I am interested in here. So anytime you can introduce chaos to the system, let's do it. I'm in. All right. I think that's when I get D&D references in, that's time to go. It's time to wrap up. Like I said, Rich and I will be back to talk about rookie rankings on Monday. Thank you very much for listening. Go over to Sharp Football Analysis. We have a ton of content coming out. Rich's rookie rankings, Ryan's draft grades, Brendan Donahue's too early 2024 draft, all over at sharpfootballanalysis.com. Make sure you check it out. And we'll be back to talk with you real soon.